All right, I've started the recorder, and we are in NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 7, which on the Kindle is on page 315. So
316
in the paperback book. Thank you, Jacqueline. All right, NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 7. A mistake that you make is believing that you are guilty for the imagining that you do. I tell you, you are not guilty because you are imagining. You are not guilty because you are taking a walk through fantasy. You are not guilty because you have literally done nothing. This seems difficult for you to accept because you believe the world. You believe the world is real, so you must be guilty. Can you see the direct connection between your belief in the world and your feeling of guilt? Okay, what's going to happen next, this next paragraph, instead of reading along with me? I think I'd prefer you guys to just close your eyes or whatever helps you to imagine and listen to this paragraph and kind of do what is being asked, okay? Can you imagine for a moment that the world is not real? Can you imagine it as fantasy or a made-up daydream? When you imagine this, really feel it. Feel that the world is not real. And when you feel it, do you see how your feeling of guilt goes too? And then whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes and tell me if you've had any noticed anything with that paragraph.
A sense of relief. Thank God.
Anybody else notice anything? Were you able to imagine it well enough to notice anything?
A sigh of relief.
A sigh of relief.
Yeah. I feel it here. Just a loosening. Because the identity goes with it too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the point he's making, is that there's a direct correlation between our feeling of guilt and our belief that this is real. And, you know, if this is really, really real, even if I just snap at you for a moment and hurt your feelings, I've done something really bad. You know? But somehow, and for me this is difficult to explain, but somehow I wouldn't call it, for me, I'm going to just talk from my experience instead of from the way that NTI is referring to it right now, as the world is not real. Maybe I'm more aligned with you here, Tom, in that I would say, as I perceive this as less real, right, which is probably the same as saying the world is not real, but as I perceive this person, this personality as less real, less of who I am, then I'm also more forgiving of those little lapses. You know, I mean, like, I lapse and I come back. And there doesn't have to be any guilt about it. I just lapse and I come back. So the more I don't see myself as this, which is probably simultaneous to also not seeing the world as real, because they go hand in hand, right? Then I don't feel guilty. I just correct really quickly. And I correct really quickly because I know I want to be in harmony with myself. I don't want to be out of harmony. It's more about what I want than good or bad. It's just, I know I don't want to be out of harmony with myself. So, starting with sentence 13. This is what I am telling you. The world is illusion. It is not real. Heaven has not changed because of this imagined experience, and so you are not guilty. And because you are not guilty, you are free. Now, when these words were written, I had no understanding yet. I mean, you know, I was the green behind the ears student, right? I had no understanding. But now when I...
It's wet behind the ears.
Oh, wet behind the ears. Well, green moss grew because I was so damn wet behind the ears. How's that?
Good recovery. Good recovery.
Isn't green also, when you're green, isn't that a sense of green. You don't know?
Yeah, but you mix the two idioms together and you came up with green.
Yeah, that's true. I did. It's funny. Okay, so let's see. Where was I with my intelligent statement? Okay, when I received this material, I did not understand it at all. And so I think words were used back then because I would... because I would accept the word intellectually, and I didn't have an understanding beyond intellectual. And so the word heaven, I think, was used for that reason, right? I think that if I was the scribe of NTI today, the word heaven would not have been used. It probably would have said something more like, you have not changed because of imagined experience, or truth has not changed because of imagined experience, or awareness is not affected because of imagined experience, right? It would have said something like that, because now there is some level of true understanding. You know, there's been a realization that's happened since then that no matter what, there's this isness, this beingness that is never affected, right? And at the time that this was written, I didn't have that realization. So, but that is, you know, that's the ultimate truth, that what we are is never affected. And as we become more and more and more in touch with that, even our lapses into ignorance are less meaningful. They're meaningful. Our lapses into ignorance appear meaningful, and therefore we feel guilty or we get mad at somebody else for their lapse into ignorance when we believe everything is real and we believe someone or something was affected, right? Then you did something wrong or I did something wrong because there was an effect.
Sin.
A sin. But, you know, but as we become more and more familiar with that which is never affected in an honest way, we realize it's not affected. That we realize there is no effect. And where there is no effect, there can also be no guilt. And so, but we can still lapse into ignorance, but then all we need is a quick correction. Is, oops, I fell asleep for a second. I'm back. Now I remember what I want, right? But there's no need for guilt. And guilt just drags it on. That's all guilt does. Just makes that lapse into ignorance last longer. You know, so it's extending it.
Yeah. It's like saying, this steak is awful. Bring me some more.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I like that you said, oh, I fell asleep for a minute, because, you know, that would really help me, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and not put the guilt, like you said, but just let it go.
Yeah, we all I lapsed into ignorance today about 5 till 6, right? She saw it. But it didn't last long. You know,
Go
ahead, tell on me.
But you want to say it?
No, I want to hear you talk.
No, she just was going by me and I was getting ready to go and she said, and she gave me a funny look and then she was like, I was like, what? And she's like, I just don't know how I'm ever going to be able to get out of this house for MTI. And then I was like...
I bet you guys didn't know I was that horrible, huh? But that was a lapse. Yeah. And then I went downstairs and I sat in my chair, looked at my computer, and thought, this is ridiculous, you know? And I dropped it, and then I saw Danielle again, and I said, I just decided to walk away from it. Yeah. That's simple. Just, you know, it lasted a moment and then it was over. But it can only last, as far as I know from my own experience and based on what NTI is telling us, it can only last for a moment and then be over if somewhere, somehow, we realize there's no true effect from that lapse. If I think, oh no, you know, I mean, there's a million things I could think. Oh no, maybe I made Danielle feel bad, or oh no, now Danielle's gonna think I'm not awake, or, you know, I mean, right? There's a thousand thoughts you can have in judgment of a momentary lapse, and then your momentary lapse lasts longer. If you just catch yourself and then say, okay, look at it for a second, not what I want, I'm back. It's over like that. It's a piece of cake. Okay, so verses 2 to 7. I have told you before how loved you are. You have felt this love and known it. This love that I speak of, which you know is God, came to be known to you from within. This love that touched you and moved you with holiness came into your awareness from within you. And this love you knew was real. You felt its comfort and you recognized it. Nothing in the world can comfort you and love you. The love that comforts always comes from within. You always feel it there and know it there. You may credit something in the world with having caused it, but that is a mistake. The love came into your mind and filled your awareness through your willingness to know yourself as love. Ramana Maharshi taught that there really was only one kind of happiness, and that kind of happiness was the happiness of the self. And, you know, sometimes we think that there's this fake happiness, like, you know, when I'm playing with my dog and my dog's so cute and I'm happy. You know, that happiness isn't the happiness of the self. That's the happiness caused by the dog. And Ramana says that's not true. He says there's only one kind of happiness. In the moment, then, if you're playing with your dog and feeling happy, in that moment, you're not thinking about all the things that are your blocks to happiness. In that moment, you're in the moment, just being, and that's why you're happy. You may say, it was because of my dog, but that's just a projection. You know, you could be eating a peach that you really, really like and just tasting the peach. And in that moment, when you're tasting that peach and loving that peach, are you thinking about your financial problems? Are you thinking about your romantic problems? Are you thinking about your physical problems? See, Ramana Maharshi says it's not because of the peach. It's because in that moment you aren't thinking about all of the things that block your happiness. He says happiness is absolutely natural, and whenever we allow it to arise, it arises. And whenever we block it, it's blocked. It's that simple. And this is, in effect, saying the same thing. It's using the word love instead of happiness, but it's saying whenever you feel love within yourself, or you feel loved within yourself, it's because in that moment you're allowing it. You know, you may say it's my spouse or my child, you know, or you may say it was God, but the truth is, in that moment when you were feeling love or feeling loved, you weren't blocking it. And so that which is natural was there. Yeah.
It's, to me, it's like when you look at something that you perceive as beautiful, in order for you to be able to perceive something as beautiful, there has to be a corresponding consciousness within.
Yes.
Or else you couldn't identify it that way.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I love about my walks every day. I think every single day, what I notice is how beautiful everything is during my walks. But typically when I'm walking, I mean, even though I have a lot of work, when I go on my walk with Jamie, I'm not thinking about my work. I'm not sitting there figuring out what am I going to do, you know, when I get back, how am I going to answer that email, or how am I going to make this work. I'm walking. And I'm looking at the flowers, and I'm looking at the sky, and I'm looking at the butterfly, and I'm looking at Jamie, and, you know, and I'm just being. And whenever we're just being, that joy, that love, that peace that's natural to us is there. Whenever we start focusing on the world as if it's real, and whatever our certain situations are in the world, then that all gets covered up again. So it's kind of like a door that opens, and then we close it. And then it opens, and then we close it. It's silly, isn't it?
Yeah. I often wondered, because like when my little step-grandson was born, and I went to the hospital to visit him, and I took one look at him, and I just started crying. I just bawled. I mean, I just saw this preciousness. And I never could understand that. I couldn't explain it to anybody. So that kind of tells
yes.
me a little bit of that.
Yes, you were just totally... And a baby is an incredible miracle. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, everything in life is a miracle, but a baby is a strong symbol of that miracle. We sometimes forget to think it's a miracle when we see the spider crawling across the floor. We forget. But the baby, we remember. But the spider is the same miracle. Yeah. All right. So verse 12, or sentence 12. This is the meaning of God. It is the love that lives and fills every being with perfection from within. This is your truth. This, which you have known, is reality. So we've all known love. We've all known happiness. We've all known joy. We've all known gratitude. We've all known awe. And it's saying these things, this is our naturalness. And this is also that which is God. And it also reminds me again of A Course in Miracles, where A Course in Miracles says something about the meaning of love cannot be taught, right? It says that our job is to search for, I forget the exact words, but search for and find all of the blocks to love's presence, right? This is saying the same thing in a different way. So if we're not currently blocking it, it is present, it is natural. Whenever we let it be there, it is there. Verses 8 to 13. By all this, I ask you to look again. Look first in your heart and find God there. Then look at the world. Know that all hearts at the deepest core are the same. And then look at the world. Feel God, feel truth, and then look at the world. So this is kind of a continuation of the same theme that we had going last week, which led us to, you know, have an assignment of keeping those thoughts in our minds, in our pockets, and in our minds. But in our pockets will still help us keep it in our minds. But what this is saying is, you know, the more I'm focused on God here and look out, the more I'm going to know that joy, that love, that happiness, that peace, that presence. And sometimes it manifests as compassion. You know, compassion is very different than suffering. But sometimes you can tell someone else is suffering and there's a compassion that's there. But the way that I look out at the world and see, and the way that I look out the world and know these things in me is to first put God on my mind. Because if I first put my financial problems on my mind, that's not the way it's going to be. If I first put my health problems on my mind, that's not the way it's going to be. You know, so God needs to be on my mind. God needs to be the filter through which I am looking if I want to see and experience a beautiful world. And really all that means is not blocking it with all that other stuff that we tend to block it with. Denying it with, you're saying. Yes. Yes. Sentence 8. Which one is real and which is illusion? Which is your true desire? Which do you want to be and to extend? You know the answer. The answer to my question is your truth. What you seek above all else is yourself. You, in your reality, are the answer. Now, this is an interesting question, which one is real and which one is illusion, because at the time that NTI was written, another thing that I still had in me was the doubt, the fear that the truth was not true and the world was real. That's the doubt, right? And so that doubt was still very alive in me. And so what Spirit is doing here to help kind of move me another step beyond that doubt is say, you know, which one's real and which one's illusion? Well, look at yourself. Which one do you really desire? You know, which one do you really want to be? Who are you? What do you want to be? You know, do you want to be the bitch or do you want to be love? You know the answer. You know, which, and he's just asking me to look which is in my heart and which somehow I'm allowing to be there, but it's not my heart. You know, the one that's my heart must be the truth. And the one that I'm allowing to be there, but it's not my heart, that's not the truth. And it's kind of tuning me into it in that way.
Well, his Spirit's question, which is your true desire? To me, what's being said there is whatever you focus your desire on is the one that's real for you.
Well, for me, I heard that a little differently. I heard the reason it's in your heart as your true desire is because it's your truth. Yeah, the reason it's in your heart as your true desire is because it's your truth. And some part of you knows that, and some part of you is never going to stop wanting to return to that. It can't be satisfied with less. Verses 14 to 16. Open your heart and welcome yourself. You are the truth that you seek. And in welcoming yourself, you welcome your brothers, and you welcome all that is true about the world. All that is not true is let go, because that which is not true is meaningless. In this way, you rest in God. When you rest in God, your truth is welcomed. Probably one of the greatest things that's happened to me in this lifetime is it's not that I don't see other people's egos. You know, like if somebody's acting from ego, I know they're acting from ego. It's not that I don't see it. It's just that it doesn't mean anything. You know, the ego is seen as this surface, temporary, unimportant that thing that's there in that moment. But it's not at all who anybody is for real. And so what has happened for me, and this has been going on for a few years now, at least, maybe more than a few. What has happened for me is somebody can be as in their ego as a person can be. I'll use my friend Debbie as an example. She's probably the most extreme case I've had, right?
You know, thank you for not being me.
Danielle! No, well, Danielle's different than Debbie. I have seen Danielle very, very in ego. But the difference between Debbie and Danielle is Danielle implodes, right? So it doesn't end up on me. Debbie explodes. So it ends up on me or whoever else happens to be in the area. Do you agree with that? Yeah. So Debbie is someone who, you know, if anybody was going to upset me in the last few years, she would have been able to do that because, you know, just the behavior was so extreme. And you know, nothing, you know, just absolutely nothing. You know, when she's, you know, we call it prison Debbie when she's upset in that way. You know, when she gets all upset and she's being prison Debbie, you know, prison Debbie isn't who she is. It's not, you know, lots of people try and say that intellectually, you know, like, I know that's not who she is, while meanwhile they're all upset. But I know that's not who she is. And I know this prison Debbie thing is just happening right now because she's believing her thoughts and, you know, and her thoughts are crazy and so she's acting crazy, right? I mean, it makes perfect sense. But it's not who she is. And so what happens is my love for her is completely constant. You know, and I think as a result, one thing she's felt around me is that love, that patience. You know, other people that are in her life, when she starts acting like that, they react off of it, right? And it turns into a double homicide. But in my case, I don't react off of it, and she feels very, very safe. And she seems to come around, like maybe within a couple of hours. But she comes around, doesn't she? And she's back to being her loving self again. So for me, the greatest thing maybe that's happened to me in this lifetime is not perceiving the ego as having any meaning. It's not that I don't see the ego. You can't help but see when somebody's, you know, acting like that. You know, you'd have to have a lobotomy, be an idiot, right? But it has no meaning. It's not who they are in a very real way. And it allows you to just be patient with anything, wait through anything, because you know it's going to end, you know it's going to last. And I really think I can take everyone as they are. Because I know as they really are. I can take as they're being in that moment, because I know who they really are. And I trust my brothers. I remember I used to read, especially NTI, John talks a lot. When NTI John was coming, NTI John talks a lot about trusting your brothers. And back then, man, I couldn't even figure out how. How the hell can you trust these people, right? And in fact, that sounds stupid to trust these people, you know, because they'll screw you right and they'll screw you left if you give them half a chance. But now, I understand a trust that's even beyond if you, quote, screw me. Like, even that won't get in the way of the trust.
There's no effect.
There's no effect. Yeah, that's what I used to, Debbie used to worry that she would steal from me. Because, you know, stealing was her thing. And so she used to worry that she would steal from me. And I'm like, if you steal from me, you steal from me. You know? But then the joke was on her. Because the only money I had in the house was money she gave me. She used to give me money every month, and I'd stick it in my bedroom. And so if she stole, she'd just be taking her own money back. But you know, I mean, the truth is, it wouldn't have mattered if she stole. Not to me. Now, again, I would have understood that she was in pain, and so there would have been compassion there. But it would not have changed my perception of her. And so I was willing to let her into my house, knowing she might steal from me. And I didn't have any expectation that she wouldn't. And as far as I know, she never did. If she did, I didn't miss it. She gave to me a lot. Yes.
So you were mentioning one of the best gifts you've ever received in life. Is that the ability? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is
to not give any meaning to the ego. You know? And that's true for me too. That's also my ego. That's why I could get upset at 5 till 6 and be over it, you know, by 6. Because I don't give any meaning to the ego. So it doesn't matter whether it shows up in you or whether it shows up in me. I see the ego as a temporary, unimportant, you know, event.
So you could almost treat it like it didn't really happen because it's meaningless.
It's meaningless. Yeah.
And also, in other words, it's innocent. Let me see the innocence. Let me see my brothers as innocent as they truly are. You're able to do that.
I'm able to do that, naturally.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how it happened. You know, sometimes I can tell you stories about, you know, this happened and that's when I let go of and this happened. This, I don't know exactly how it happened. I suppose it happened through all of those stories put together, right? It just, at some point, the ego became absolutely meaningless. It happened with my daughter. Like, she can be an ego and it's fine. You know, my boyfriend can be an ego and it's fine. You know, I don't want anyone to be an ego for them. I mean, the compassion is still there. I understand that when anybody's an ego, they're suffering. But it doesn't affect how I look at them or how I feel about them or my wanting to be around them or my trust of them. Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt you.
I'm done.
Okay. So that isn't even really forgiveness because you're not even really...
There's nothing to forgive anymore.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, forgiveness is when the grievance happens and then you let go of it. Right. It's kind of like you guys weren't here last week, but I drew a picture on the flip chart.
It's probably still there.
It's probably still there. Shall I get it?
Okay.
Okay. And I guess for the recording, I'll try and explain that the picture shows a really lousy drawing of a person because I'm not an artist. It has a head and shoulders and a chest, and inside the chest there's a heart. And basically what I was showing with the flip chart, well, I'll wait till he gets it out here and then I'll finish telling the story.
They took it.
Oh, they did take it.
It's real simple. You want to do it again?
Sure, I'll do it again. Danielle, do you want to come be a podium and stand next to me with the recorder? So that, and I'll speak as I'm doing it this time so people who aren't here can. I think I need to get a marker. Did you? It's funny because there were pages and pages of stuff on here that have probably been on here for months. And last week we used it, now it's cleaned up. They're right. They were right there. Did they take them too?
You're right.
Yeah, they don't want us using their flip chart, apparently.
Here we go.
Okay. That would burn down the place. Then they'll definitely not put us back in here. All right. So I'm drawing a circle, which is supposed to be a head. And now I'm drawing shoulders. And I'm drawing a heart in the chest. All right? So when a thought comes in from wherever the heck thoughts come in, hits the brain, right? And you see that thought as having some truth to it, it goes here. And when it goes here, this is when you start having emotional experiences, right? And once a thought has come into the heart and you've allowed it into the heart and you're having emotional experiences, this is when you need to practice forgiveness in a very strong way. This is what teachings like rest, accept, and trust are all about, right? So your most involved forgiveness practices happen because you believed something so deeply. Now, at some point, at least for me, after learning to practice this type of forgiveness with this heavy stuff for a long time, what started happening, even with the same thoughts, they come in and they hit the brain, and there might be like a little twinge, a quick decision, I don't want it, and they go right back out, and they never even hit the heart. This is what I call the choose again level. I mean, here you can't really choose again at the heart level. You got a whole lot of other work you got to do. You got to rest, accept, and trust, and you know, right? You can't just say, okay, I choose again. You know, it's not that easy. But if the thought comes in and you see it for just a second, and you go, no, and you choose again, it goes right back out. And then when you practice with that, at some point the thoughts seem to go, it's like you could still see them fly by, like, oh, I saw that unworthiness thought go by, but you didn't even have to choose again. It just went right over the head. You know, and that's when you don't need forgiveness. Things become natural again, right? And at some point, these thoughts even disappear. Like now, I don't even see thoughts fly over my head that I should distrust you. You know, I mean, they're just not there. The trust is just natural. So it's kind of like you have this level of deep forgiveness, rest, accept, and trust. That's when something's gotten to the heart. You have this level of simple looking at a thought and choosing again. And then you have this level where you see them, but they don't mean anything anymore. And then at some point, you don't even see them. Okay, is that good enough, or does anybody have questions?
Just destroy the evidence, that's all.
Yeah, I guess we will. And do you have the lid for this? Yeah, I guess we'll just take that home. Thank you. So yeah, like I said, as far as this trust, this love, this unaffectedness, you know, I see your ego, but it don't mean anything to me thing, that probably, like I said, I don't have an event where I can tell you that happened, but probably through all of the forgiveness that I did in all of those events, right, at some point, this just occurred, and it's been here for a long time, and it seems to be quite stable, so, yeah. So that's the greatest gift I've received in this lifetime. All right, so it's up to you guys. We could stop now. The next chapter's pretty long. It's 8:15. We could stop, do a bit of silence, and then discussion. What do you guys want to do?
Let's stop because I wanted to discuss.
discuss a little bit.
Okay, so we will, we should need an assignment before we can stop. We're not allowed to stop without an assignment. All right, I have the assignment if you guys are willing. You can always say no to my assignments, by the way. Say, nope, I'm not willing for that. Yeah, you can.
All this time.
Free will. So here's my suggested assignment. The suggested assignment is when you notice that you're happy, but you're thinking it's because of, just delete the because of and accept the happiness as it is. So let go of the projection, I'm happy because I'm doing 3D animation. I'm happy because I love my partner. I'm happy because somebody else is helping with my mom and I get a break. I'm happy because, what are you happy for? What do you think you're happy for?
Winning a competition.
I'm happy because I won a competition. I'm happy because my parents are here. I'm happy because my husband's happy, right? Oh, you too, happy because my husband's happy. That one fits for you too, right? Just let go of the because and just say, I'm happy. And if you want to add a because I'm not blocking it right now.
That would be better. Yeah.
Okay, I'm happy because I'm not blocking it right now. I'm just letting myself be happy. So that's the assignment. So we're letting go of the belief that something outside of us makes us happy. And what I'll do is I'll stop the recorder and we'll have a little bit of silence and then we'll come back and discuss.